Off the ball.
Rugby.
And then with the players, they're just so supportive and, you know, you see it, like they play with their heart and their sleeve, and that's all you want from them, to do or die out there, and that's what they do.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Six Nations
on Off the Ball
with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.
Welcome along. We are now midway through the Six Nations. We're getting a feel of how things are going. Again, England and France have been the two most impressive teams so far. But Ireland putting in a pretty good display in Cork last week against England. Then it got away in the second half. It's Newport that they're heading to this weekend for the game against Wales. Wales have got a good record in the last three or four seasons against Ireland, but generally Ireland have been pretty good in the Six Nations era against them, winning 10 of their 13 matches. They'll be looking to push on and get the second win, and second on the road as well, having already beaten Italy. I'm delighted to say that Leinster's back-to-back All-Ireland League winning coach, Tania Rosser, is here with me. Tania, how are you getting on?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
We'll get to the Erin King news in a few moments, which is kind of the unfortunate way to start this, but we also have Wales legend Philippa Tuddy with us as well. Philippa, how are you getting on?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Yeah, really good, thank you.
Before we come in and we talk about the unfortunate news we have with Erin King missing the rest of the season, can you tell us where Wales women's rugby is at the moment, Philippa? Because we get ready to go into this round, you know, in the wooden spoon position, having lost against Italy, changing around in the coaches. Obviously, you know, we're kind of reading an awful lot about issues that Welsh rugby are having currently. Where is the Wales women's team at the moment?
Right, how long have we got? So
as long as you need.
It's been... Look, it doesn't look great, does it? They haven't won a game, but they have had a lot of upheaval. And actually, the feeling around women's rugby at the moment is actually quite positive, which I need to give some context to. So they did have a change of management literally 4 days before the Six Nations started. Sean Lynn, the former Gloucester Hartbury coach who won the treble in the PWR, the Premiership Women's Rugby, he signed up and he came on as head coach for Wales. And I think because he is a proven coach and he has just started with the team, they are very much being given a grace period, but equally take nothing away from their performances. Yes, there have been losses, but you know, as we saw in the last round against France, that first half, very similar actually to the way that Ireland went, really fronted up, huge defensive effort. So we're seeing small increments of improvements, but if you just look at it at the table, you look at it at the points, it doesn't look great for Wales women. But when you dig a little deeper, you can see the improvements. And I think as much as the Six Nations is obviously an amazing tournament and we would love to be winning games, I think everyone has sort of resided to the fact that this is very much a learning, a growth, and it's all about the World Cup for the Welsh women, really.
Yeah, because when it comes to those growing pains, I was at the RDS when Wales came over here and beat Ireland a few years ago, and it was just the start of some of the Welsh players getting onto contracts. And here in Ireland, we were thinking, maybe Wales is the model that we actually have to try and copy, because it felt like Wales had moved a little bit ahead. There's no doubt there's talent in that squad.
Oh, there's so much talent. I mean, look at the likes of Georgia Evans, plays for Saracens. Now, Saracens are littered with internationals, not just English. They have Canadians, they have Americans. Georgia Evans starts every single week for Saracens. And I could go on and list you a whole other load of names that play for Gloucester Hartbury, that play for Bristol, these top Premiership teams. So there is talent there. And I think the last coach, Ewan Cunningham, he was great in the initial stages. He took the team from amateur to professionalism, and he really facilitated and managed that environment when at times he started off with 12 girls being professional, and then he had to bring in the other girls on sort of a part-time basis. And eventually we got to the squad being fully contracted. Contractors weren't handled very well last summer, and I think that has a lot to do with the performance that we saw last summer, especially in the WXV. That then led to, unfortunately, the change of coach, new management. Contracts are sorted. But like I say, this year in context, there's been a lot that's gone on behind the scenes, and we just need to see slow progressions. And something like going away to France, one of the most formidable places to play rugby. I mean, their crowds are amazing. It was 14,000 there last week. And to score two tries against them away, like, that doesn't sound like much. But in the context, that is a progression for Wales.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, Tania, when it comes to this weird chat before we come on air, that in a way, it's about reaching a level as to which team is going to finish third. That's definitely been Ireland's aim for the last couple of seasons. And then probably being competitive in those matches against England and France, where since 2018 in particular, it's been a very clear trend, they're quite a bit away from the pack.
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen a massive change in the Irish girls over the last 2 years. Like that, we went through that transition period where we struggled and, you know, the girls got a hard time through the media and the support. But we've transitioned over now and we're playing really good rugby and we've seen massive improvements. You know, the first 40 minutes, 50 minutes against England last week really showed it that our girls could step up to that level. And unfortunately, we couldn't push on and progress on into the second half. But a huge amount of positives for us and the style that they're trying to play. You know, our lineouts are functioning. We've got a good kicker in the game as well. And our defensive, like, I think our defence for the Irish women's team is our powerhouse at the moment. It's really, it's changed from previous years. We've done a bit of defence, but now we're really defending now, which is great.
Yeah. The news about Erin King then, who's going to go under the knife, I believe, this afternoon, which is the sad news that the surgery is going to rule her out of the World Cup as well. I was just looking at some of the stats last night. They're formidable in terms of what she's done so far. So both attacking and defensive rooks hit in the Six Nations this year. Erin King is top of both. That's how much work she's been getting.
Yeah, her work rate is phenomenal. And she's still only young. You know, everyone looks at her as being senior because she's been on our Irish squad for 3 or 4 years now. But her work rate around the pitch, she's, you know, for us at the breakdown area, she's the first arriving, I don't know, highest first arriver at the breakdown area. But not only that, she's our go-to line-out person. I think they've gone to her 20 times in the last three matches. She's got high percentage of turnover ball, and she's fit and fast and strong. And I think, you know, we're really going to miss her leading up into that World Cup. I think she's a really important player for us and just really gutted for her because she's worked so hard. You know, and transitioning from sevens into 15s isn't the easiest. And she's played a lot of sevens. I remember her from when she was playing touch rugby when she was 13 or 14 and watching this kid go. I was just like, she's a baller. She's amazing, you know. And she was running around all our adults at touch, you know. And she would come in and do gym session with us and she'd be doing like a 16-year-old 25 with a 20kg chin-up at the age of 16. Mm. So she's phenomenal, but she's going to be a huge loss. And I'm wondering who's going to step into that position from a line-out perspective as well. I know we could have Derv in there. Is Derv a line-out option? I don't think so. She's definitely a breakdown option.
Yeah.
But it's all that other work rate she does around the pitch.
Just for anyone who missed the news, it's a knee injury picked up in the England game last week, so it requires surgery. Looks like his ligaments, and Erin King saying herself, just 21 years of age, as Tanya mentioned, heartbroken to suffer this knee injury because it means I don't just miss the rest of the season, but I'm also going to miss the Rugby World Cup as well. It feels very unfair right now that I've had the best few months of my career up until now, but I will now try and support the team in any way possible from the sidelines. So a big blow. Like, Philip, Erin King has been one of the standout players in the Six Nations so far generally as well.
No, absolutely. And I do a bit of work on the HSBC 7 series and she's standout in the squad then. And you do have to pinch yourself and remind yourself she's still so young because she plays so maturely. You know, you don't really see those sort of rookie mistakes that you can forgive a young player for doing, maybe forcing that offload or trying to step someone, go on gas on the outside. She never does. She's a very composed player. And I guess the only slight tiny silver lining is that she is young, so this is a horrific injury to sustain, but hopefully we will see her back, you know, back strong for maybe next Six Nations campaign. But it is really such a loss. And you know, when, like, a coach quite often will tell players, you are my defensive ruck or you are my attacking ruck. You can quite often prescribe that because forwards work in pods, so they know which ones to sort of prioritise. So when you see a player as top of both attacking and defensive, that hasn't come from the coach, that's come from her. That's just her work rate. She's hit one, she's looking and she's going for the next one as well. And yet she still has the athleticism and the fitness to be out in the loose as well, which sometimes you find, you know, your back row forwards, if they're prioritising the ruck, you won't see them on those outside fringes, but you do actually see her playing out wide, using her seven skills as well. So, yeah, real loss for Ireland.
Philip, if I can ask you about bringing those seven skills into the 15s game. It's kind of been an uneasy conversation for us sometimes here in Ireland because players weren't available and they were being pulled away for the seven series and the Olympic cycle was there. And the 15s team sometimes suffered by not having some of their best players around. At the moment, it seems to be working quite well. Stacey Flood was saying last week that they now have a very much a commitment towards 15s for this Six Nations. But could you talk to me a bit about trying to balancing the two, where, like, if you're a sevens player coming into 15s, is that a challenge when you come in to try and get involved in the 15s game internationally?
Yes, it is. I do. It's very much dependent on where you started your rugby. So, you know, we have seen some, say, talent transfers where young girls maybe come from netball, hockey, Gaelic football, and they've gone into sevens and then tried to go into 15s. I think that's hard. Whereas some players that have grown up playing 15s, but then, you know, focus on sevens for a bit and come back, I think it's brilliant. I think it's such an asset to have because quite simply, you touch the ball so much more in sevens. I mean, you could you talk for hours about the fitness benefits, the physical benefits, but it's purely touching the ball. And I think for young athletes to be able to get their hands on the ball, to be making decisions under pressure at split second speed is just fantastic for the development of the game. And the one thing I love about sevens, you hear coaches talk about it, and sometimes, you know, like all great coaches, they try and overcomplicate and talk about process and theories. But actually with sevens, it's quite simple. It's get the ball to space, run in a gap, run hard, run fast. And just to get those fundamentals, because then when you go to 15s, it is a lot more process driven. You do have to think about phase play, territorial game. But actually, if you've got a confident basis of how to expose a 2v1, a 3v1, how to create those attacking opportunities, especially as a forward, that is such an asset, I think, for a 15s team to have.
Tanya, you've been coaching quite a few players that were away in the sevens programme and then were playing for Leinster in the Interpros for you. How did you find it? Are you a coach that overcomplicates it?
Oh, probably. Jeez, I don't know. Throw the ball around, find space and run hard. I just, like,
here we go.
Sevens is such an... I love sevens. I grew up playing sevens back in New Zealand and touch rugby, obviously. And I just think it's hugely important for our girls to be exposed in those areas. Especially from also defence, tackling one-on-one tackles. You've got to make one-on-one tackles or else you're exposed greatly.
So good at blitz defence and so good at covering the sevens.
And just reading when to shut down. Amy Lee and them know when to read to shut down on the sevens blitz. But I just think the sevens girls have come in. Now they're playing in the right positions, like they're at our back three players or like that, they're in the back row.
Yeah.
So really good places to have our sevens girls. But they've come in, they also add that, you know, that high intensity training. They're used to training hard, they're used to training at high speeds, and their ball skills have really, really improved over the years of playing sevens. I think it's great that we've been able to merge our girls. And Wales have a couple in there too, and back into the 15s game, because I really think it's really important for them to be in the 15s game as well.
Yeah, and I guess we're getting to a period as well. I was just thinking of one of your players who was up doing media a couple of weeks ago, Aoife Dalton, who you would have had at centre, and she was mentioning that you know, a lot of the players who came before her would have played other sports and then moved into rugby. She's one of those generation now who've been steeped in rugby since a very young age. And when it comes to rugby skill and rugby IQ and all that, that tends to make a huge difference that they've got that much experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, massively. I mean, when we were playing back many years ago, the girls had limited time in rugby. Aoife, I remember watching Aoife in that age group under 18s Leinster, where they just went through and hammered every team in the provinces, and they're phenomenal, and a lot of them are now in the national team. So what have they had? Probably 8-9 years of rugby, and it's brilliant. Aoife Dalton is outstanding. You know, she's probably our defensive queen or king, whatever you want to say, but she reads the game so well, and she's worked really, really hard on her game. But they've had these girls, Erin King and them, have been playing rugby a lot longer than what previously was happening here in Ireland.
Yeah, I think Aoife Wafer was making that point as well, that they had a steeped team, they were blessed at underage, and now they've all come together. So it actually has helped maybe with some of those combinations when it's come to the senior team as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look at the under-18s Leinster team, you had Erin King, Aoife Wafer, Katie, you had Dana O'Brien, not bad, you know, and then you had Aoife Dalton out there as well, and I think they won their final something. It might have been like 52-0, but they've been together as a core group for a very long time, and they know each other really, really well off the pitch, which makes a good chemistry. And I think they really enjoy being around each other, which helps. You know, and a lot of them played Leinster with me. Now they're on the national team, so it's really good for them.
Mm. If we can take us back to last week, I'll start with you on this one, Tanya, where it seemed in Cork maybe the shock might even have been on at one point when that game went 25 minutes, 30 minutes in, and England were finding it very difficult to get past the Irish defence. Ireland got a try themselves. And then, of course, the second half, we saw what happened, England do what England do. But what was your overall assessment of that Irish performance?
Look, like I thought, like when I watched that first half, I was like, game on. You know, their defensive set was really, really good. And I think that was led by like the likes of the forwards, Nebo Dowd, getting up in the English attack, which put England under a pressure in that first half. But like you said, England being England, they adapted to the game and things started to click for them. But, like, hugely positive. You know, we've never held England to a 5-0 at half-time or ever. I can't even remember.
It's been a lot of 40-plus point beatings the last few years.
By half-time.
Yeah.
You know, and these girls really put it up to them. And it's how can they progress to get push on into that second half you know, just to pull us through a bit longer. I would have liked less kicking down to Kildan, you know, best fullback in the world after probably, you know, and Joyce is probably in there as well, the best fullback in the world at the moment. But you're kicking to the best fullback in the world and give her time to run, you know, she's going to open up gaps for
your forwards are never going to thank you there, where you can just keep the ball maybe for a little while.
Or your scrum half that has to, has to encourage that your forwards to keep playing. But really, really promising. But then our lineup kind of shifted and our scrum was under pressure, which we normally don't have, you know, and we get a yellow card at our scrum. So we're under pressure that way. And probably I would have thought they would have made two substitutes in that front row just to give us a bit more weight and pack down. Now, Neva Udowd is phenomenal around the pitch, and I like, she's one of my favourite players out there. Could we have shifted her to back row if that's what he wants her on for the defensive shift, and put Christy Haney in to solid down that, you know, seal down that scrum? I don't know. I do think Neva Udowd is our starting prop no matter what, because of what she does around the rest of the pitch. I just think against England, a big forward pack like that, we're under a bit of pressure.
Yeah. Philippa, they're unrelenting, this England team, with the great Sarah Hunter with us last week. She's on maternity leave, so she's left their coaching team. She went straight in from playing to their coaching team, and she said the only disappointment was just the timing for the World Cup this year. But she was backing them, and I thought they've been beating everybody since the last World Cup final. But she said there's no sentiment from them in the Six Nations that England really have to put the boot down and be in the best possible place to win a home World Cup. And what we've seen so far, they've been very impressive, haven't they?
Yeah, they certainly have. And I think it was great for actually, and I'm saying this as a Welsh person, but it was great for their development to be challenged so much, because it's no good for any team to be dominant completely leading up to a World Cup where you are going to be troubled. You want to be troubled prior. And it was just such a fantastic contest, that game. It was so engaging. And I'm echoing what you say, Tanya. Like, I really thought Ireland were on. I mean, it would have been the shock of the tournament. It would have been amazing. But I think a real difference was the bench as well. I mean, England can bring Sarah Byrne off the bench. I mean, she would be starting for any other nation in the Six Nations. They've just got, you know, can't even call them finishers. They're just world-class impact players coming off the bench, and they sort of kicked on. But yeah, look, they're a brilliant team. Looking at, I think it's like 31 games on the bounce, wins in the Guinness Six Nations, averaging 8 tries a game. Like, it's insane stats. But it's credit to the union. They were the first union to turn their women's rugby team professional. And, you know, we're all kind of playing catch up at the moment to them. But I think it's fantastic for people to see where the game of women's rugby can and will get to with continued and genuine investment in the game.
I'm not sure, Phil, about how they're going to deal with the expectation of playing their games at home in a World Cup where they'll probably be expected to win. Naturally, New Zealand, Canada, there are going to be other teams who can really push them for this title as well. But at this stage, you know, 5-6 months out from a World Cup final, they feel like the team to beat, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they are hands down favourites. But, you know, strange things can happen at a World Cup. They were hands down favourites for the last World Cup in New Zealand and disposed of New Zealand in the autumn prior to the World Cup. And then, you know, what happened in the final? There was a red card. New Zealand just nick it, literally steal a line out in the dying minutes and win the game. So, you know, this team will be very aware of how dominant they have been in the Six Nations, in Autumn Nations, in WXVs. But when it comes to a World Cup, they're going to be want to be another level again.
So Tanya, Ferns are going to retain, right?
Well, yeah, maybe. But I say about England though, like, John Mitchell's done a very good job at developing a squad.
Yeah,
like, he's got a squad, like, all 36 of them are really good players. Other nations aren't at that level. You know, some nations, like, they've got a really good 15, struggled to have a good, really good 23. He's got 36 class players or 40 class players that he can slot in and out anytime he likes. That's the advantage of being England. And, you know, unfortunately, I think they are the team to beat. But, you know, I'm hoping Ireland, New Zealand can kick on in there somewhere.
Well, here's hoping. I mean, yeah. Down in Kerry, they say Yarra. So that's very much a Yarra moment we've gone. Ah, New Zealand, who knows? We'll see how things go. We'll wait till August before we make any kind of decisions on this. Okay, well, let's take a look forward then towards this weekend, because, as I mentioned, Ireland have had a decent record. Even last year, the record was good against Wales, beat them in Cork, which set up that World Cup qualification with a third-place finish. I'll give you a first shout on how you feel this is going to go, Tanya. Obviously, we have to take into account that tomorrow when the team is named, they have to work out a way to solve that problem, which is the absence of Aaron King. But how do you see this game going at the weekend?
This is no disrespect to Wales, because Wales is in a different pathway at the moment. You know, they've had that rocky time in Welsh rugby. I would say for me, I think Ireland are going to be too strong for them. Okay. I think we've improved so much in the last 12 months. They're a totally different side. I think a defensive side, our defensive line, our line speed is really phenomenal, and we put teams under pressure and we're playing a good brand of rugby. I think if we could keep ball in hand, I think we can exploit them out on the edges. I think Wales get caught very narrow. They're probably not the fittest team in the Six Nations at the moment, so I think our forwards might be able to deal with them. Although they've got a good scrum and they've scored off scrums, the Welsh girls. So I'm going with Ireland, and I just think we're just slightly a bit further along our pathway than where the Welsh girls are sitting at the moment.
Has some of that improvement been down to a psychological side of things as well? Because when I first met Scott Beaman, he was very insistent that's the main change he wanted to make. He said when he looked at it from the outside, he was thinking there were some good players in here, but they're obviously going through a bad run of results. He felt that if he got them to a position where they believe in themselves a bit more and where they get a few wins, then confidence would start to come up. Like, in a short period of time, they're going from, you know, one of the teams who are expected to finish second bottom in the Six Nations to beating New Zealand in the WXV. That was a huge change in the year.
100%. I mean, they won. WXV was a massive shift for them. They beat New Zealand. They won games over there. They're performing. They're scoring tries against teams they never scored against before. They've held teams out. So confidence is a big thing. And, you know, you've got world-class players like Aoife Wafer playing in your squad. That helps you as well. You've got the Sevens girls coming back. You know, Amy Lee is class Sevens player. You know, she's one of the best Sevens players in the world. Mm. Now she's in your squad, in the 15 squad. That's got to boost your confidence. I just think, and they've been together for a few years, these girls, although they had a different coach previous to Scott, I think Scott and his coaching team have come in and built a game plan around them and given the confidence to play their style of rugby. So they're not trying to replicate anyone else. They're trying to do their own thing, which is really nice to see.
Okay, well, Philippa, you can respond. Is it a case of Wales feeling maybe a little bit less fit than this Ireland team? Is that a concern?
Well, I can't really comment too much on their fitness. I mean, they certainly left it all out there last round, excuse me, against France. The tackling was off the charts, but they did die away in the second half. So maybe, but I actually think the way that these two teams play, Wales and Ireland, is actually quite similar. They got some good, strong forward ball carriers, reliant on the set piece. Wales love a driving maul, and I think the point of difference for me would be between the back lines, actually. I think the Welsh back line is very much developing and growing with some new combinations, whereas you look at the Irish back line, it's very settled with, you know, like you say, superstars like Amy Lee Costigan on the wing, which is just insane / unfair. So I think that could be the point of difference between these two teams. I see Wales where Ireland was, but last year in their journey, in their progression. So I would edge Ireland for this game. It'll be interesting to see the Welsh selection, because of the position that they are now with the run of losses. Italy away next round is a must win. Yeah. So are we going to see a bit of squad rotation, which unfortunately, I know I shouldn't say unfortunately, we've got players there, but they're young players. They're fantastic players. Maisie Daisy, you've got Bryony King, you've got just so many young, exciting players, but they are very young. So will they be put in for a start to maybe pull off some of the more experienced players to keep them fresh for next round? I'm not quite sure. I think if that does happen, then it is probably a certain win for Ireland. Whereas if Sean Lynn was to back the fitness of the players, and injuries have been kind through the week, and he puts out a full front, I think it could be a really competitive game, but I would still just edge Ireland, yeah.
I think Sean and his coaching team, the way they reflect in the Six Nations will be so probably defined by the next two games. So say if there's a good performance or they get something from Ireland and they beat Italy away, it looks very different to how the table looks at the moment as they get ready for the summer then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the great thing with women's rugby is you will find that people who watch it are really invested in it, and they understand the context. They understand who the new coach is. They understand that this is very much a learning, growing process. And I personally, you know, I'm a fan at heart, and I would be happy to see them be competitive in each game, which I feel that they have been, even if it doesn't mean losses. Like a bonus point loss, I would take that against Ireland. but I would want to see them beat Italy. Yes, it's away, but I do still think that is a marker. That would be, for me, the determination of a successful tournament, where they are right now in the context of everything.
What would be a successful year for Tania? No, like, obviously, Ireland want to win these next two games, but what would you consider as a successful year for Ireland then, with the World Cup in mind later on as well?
Yeah, I think we've had a successful year. Mm. It's been really positive for our girls in green. Finishing third, definitely, in the Six Nations. Can we get to the semis of the World Cup would be a good push. I think that's what Scott's going for.
Yeah.
I don't think he sees anything, unless he's beaten New Zealand, so can we go out and do that again? I think they'll be aiming for top four at the World Cup. It would be a hard ask, but I think we've got a good squad at the moment, and if they keep progressing like they are, we definitely could get up into the top four. It's just really exciting, the next couple of games. I mean, the Welsh and Ireland have both played France and England now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sorry, Ireland have played France and England, the two hardest games. How are they going to perform against Wales? Playing the Welsh away is so difficult. I mean, even years ago when I played, when I was, you know, a lot younger, it's hard playing in Wales. But the Welsh are hardcore, you know.
Did you ever play in Rodney Parade?
No, I did not play in Rodney Parade. I played in Cardiff.
Right, okay.
Cardiff Arms, you know, qualified for World Cup all those years ago. But it's hard playing away in Wales. It's not as easy as, you know, everyone gets home advantage in that. So it will be a tough ask this weekend. So I just hope the girls can go on and put a performance in from the English match.
Yeah. Do you know, Philip, I've never been to a game in Rodney Parade. I never got to cover it when it was the All Pro 12 there. The only time I've ever seen it, I think, is on the train on the way to Cardiff, on the way to Bristol, okay. From Bristol. And so you look in, you go, oh, there's Rodney Parade in there, but I've never actually had a chance to go in there. So as a rugby ground, how is it?
Yeah, it's great. It's the home to the Dragons. So I'm down there quite a bit. It's a lovely pitch. It's a fast pitch. It's quite open at both ends. So if the wind's up, that can cause a little bit of trickery with the high balls. But I've looked at the weather at the moment. It's looking quite nice. So it should be good for some running rugby.
Is that a bit like us here in Ireland, where some of the other grounds are being used? Because again, as Tanya mentioned, I remember Wales women's team playing in Cardiff almost exclusively for a long time. Here, we've been using Cork and we've been using Belfast over the last few years, trying to spread the game around the region and so on. Is that part of the idea of using Rodney Parade here?
Yeah, I think it is. Potentially, there's also maybe just a logistical clash in that it's the Judgment Day fixture in the Principality on the Saturday, where you've got all the four home regions, Scarlets, Ospreys, whatnot, playing. So maybe the Cardiff Arms Park being right next door, it wouldn't have been the best place to have host the women's game, because purely logistics. Mm. But equally, I think it is good to spread it around. It has been down in Aberavon, in Swansea, in West Wales before. It's been North Cardiff in Taftswell. It has been in Cross Keys, but that wasn't great. I don't know if you had the joy of that, Tanya, but man, try to run in, imagine like slushy snow and sand and mud, and then try and run.
It was
challenging. That's what
old school rugby.
Yeah.
That's an old school rugby. That's in my time.
your backs prefer a 4G pitch. This is about when Connacht, put in their 4G pitch. Any of the forwards over there hate it, but their backs absolutely love it. No more mud. You don't have to deal with that anymore. So maybe that's the perfect venue. Philip, I don't know, Welsh rugby at the moment, every time we talk about this on the news, on the show in the last while, it's been concerns about finances, it's Cardiff's men's team potentially going to the wall, it's all of this. Like, has that put kind of a gloom around Welsh rugby generally at the moment?
Yeah, it has. It's been really challenging times. And you get conflicting opinions with the fans. Some people are like, I've been through this before, because, you know, we've had to disband our regional system many, many years ago to become then Cardiff Osprey Scarlets. So they've kind of like, it's a changing of times, the financial constraints. You know, every team, whether it's English Premiership or Wales, have suffered post-COVID. So there was a lot to do with that. So I think there's an element of understanding, but equally, you know, you can't get away from it. This campaign was very, very disappointing. And looking to the Lions then this year, how many Welsh players are we going to see on that? You know, you arc back to 2013, it was literally nearly a Welsh squad was the Lions team. So yeah, it's been challenging times for Welsh rugby, and seeing Cardiff go into administration was quite a shock, to be honest. I don't think many people knew that was going to happen, but great to see that the Welsh Rugby Union are going to step in, because, you know, there's been so much talk about whether we should go down to three regions. Well, actually, if the Welsh Rugby Union secretly wanted to do that, then letting Cardiff go would be the easiest way to do that. So the fact that they have come in now. They're taking ownership, I think, for about 2 years until they can hopefully find a buyer to take over Cardiff. I think that gives maybe a reassurance to the fans that actually the Welsh Rugby Union does want to support all four regions and is working really, really hard. But, you know, like many industries that are still suffering from the impact of COVID, sports and the Welsh Rugby Union is. But thankfully, it hasn't affected the women's budget. They've honoured that. They've stayed with that. And, you know, it's a World Cup year. So they are going to need the most amount of funding they've ever needed before, with extra training camps, with extra tours, things like that to prepare them. And from what I'm hearing, you know, they very much, their pot has been protected. So hopefully that they will still have the best opportunity to do the best they can at this World Cup.
That's a good thing to hear, because from the outside, I think it's fair enough for most of us to naturally assume that oftentimes when the men's side of the game is really struggling financially, a union can turn around and then slash the budget for sevens or slash the budget for women's rugby to make sure that the very top end continues to get the money that they require. It's good to hear that that's been ring-fenced, because I definitely would have had a concern that women's rugby could suffer for that.
No, it certainly has. And I mean, there was a bit of a talk around the travel logistics for last round. They played on the Saturday, they flew out on the Friday. And as it happens, they hit a massive traffic jam. So they flew in on the Friday, didn't get to their hotel until about 10 o'clock at night. Couldn't do the captain's run, obviously, and then went straight into playing France. But I don't think that was a monetary thing. I think that was literally a logistical thing. There's just not that many flights flying out. And obviously, Munster was out there playing in Bordeaux. So I think they took a lot of the available flights as well. So I know there was a lot of talk around, was that a budget thing? And that wasn't. It wasn't ideal, don't get me wrong. It was unlucky. There was traffic, but it was more of just there just weren't that many flights, so they had to fly out the day before.
Yeah, as a general fan of the game, that's good news, Tony, to hear that's in place, because it's not that long ago. I'm looking at most of the team over there with the Grand Slam team in the mud in Italy. And I was just thinking, Jeanette Feary had to write to the Irish Times once upon a time to basically lift the lid on the fact that they were paying for their own train to play a game in France. And that was just before that happened.
Yeah, that was shocking.
I mean,
it was like a 6-hour train trip.
Yeah.
You know, and the girls had to pay their own way. And, you know, it was the logistics back then was crazy. But then 2013, they go and win Grand Slam and Six Nations. And then they do really well in the 2014 World Cup. So did it galvanise them? I don't know. Maybe it did, but it is hard. And, you know, you do worry about it when the men's clubs are folding.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, what's going to happen to the women's game? And I'm glad to hear that the Welsh are going to continue looking after the women's team, because the women's sport is really, really important. And, like, and we've got to keep advocating for it and making sure that we are getting looked after and that those women that are still playing are getting what they need and what they deserve.
Because it kind of feels like they've turned a corner now. So all the players talk about the Celtic Challenge being important. It's just for getting together and getting more games, because the interpro season is short. You know, it's like the coaching it. And that's not that many times to maybe get the exposure to the national selectors, but also maybe not enough time to get to, you know, up to speed and to get to your best game. Now this seems to have at least provided a few more matches for them.
Yeah. I think interpros is a good standard, and I think they probably should play, you know, home and away at that level, because that Munster-Leinster-Connacht rivalry is really, really good. And, you know, you see the class players like Aoife Northern playing in it. Celtic Challenge, I got mixed feelings on that. I've said this before. I think it is the right thing to have. I just don't think we've got it in the right place at the moment. If you look at what the Welsh in Scotland, I've said this previously, they're using it for their development players. We sent all our international girls.
Going all out.
We're going all out. And, you know, I'm like going, what's the benefit of beating kids 100-0.
Because you're coaching the Energy League as well. Did you lose players as a result of that as well?
Yeah, we lost between 15 and 16 to do with that, and the 7s and 15s. So essentially we were really down to the bones, where I had to put my name on the team sheet and play a couple of games, which is that's how desperate we were. But
that's all Fiona Hayes coming out to play as well.
Well, I had my last World Cup in 2014, mate. There's no running in these leagues left. You know, but, you know, essentially I do think the Celtic Challenge is a great idea. But like the Welsh, I don't know, 18, 19-year-old girls using it as development.
Yeah.
Is there a better way of using it or making the calendar better to fit the AIL Interpros Celtic League Six Nations?
What do you reckon, Philip? I mean, we've seen very much development teams that have played our two Irish representative sides, and I don't know whether that is, again, a good or a bad thing that they've won some of those games very heavily because Ireland are stacked with 8 or 9 internationals on the team.
Yeah, I think, again, I echo Tanya's thoughts, actually. I think it's good to have it, but it's very much in its development. And I think they are still trying to figure out exactly what it is useful for. From a Welsh perspective, it has actually been great for those younger players to get just experiences like travel. You know, how do you prepare for traveling, sleeping away from home, things like that, that actually, if you go into a senior squad, you're expected to be professional and know exactly what to do, when, how, and slot into the environment. So I think it's a really good sort of learning point alongside the under-18s and 20s programs and things like that, to have that club structure. And it's also helped some players who are signed in the PWR but maybe aren't getting game time or have had an injury and they're coming back from that, they've been able to get vital minutes prior to a Six Nations. But equally, this is all under the umbrella of development, young players, injured players, things like that. Whereas actually, it would be great if it could be a really challenging league and maybe adopting something more like a URC, a United Rugby Championship, bringing the Italian teams in, because they haven't got the biggest league, but they've got some fantastic individual players. Now, some of them have made that huge decision of moving over to England to play in the PWR, but I'm sure they would prefer to stay at home, be able to play for a franchise within their own country, but still get a quality game with a Welsh franchise, a Scottish and an Irish. So I think there's still scope in development, but I think it also should be open to learning and getting the feedback from every nation as to how we can make it stronger, because PWR isn't going to be having any more teams anytime soon, the Premiership Women's Rugby League, and they have a cap on other international players that can play for each team. So England qualified players, EQP. There has to be a certain representation on every single squad. So we have seen, in fact, some really talented Irish internationals, Welsh internationals, who have played every club game, but then it's come to the sort of semi-finals, quarter-finals, knockout games, and they've lost a place. And they've been put on the bench or even out of the squad completely, purely because the team has to fulfill the England qualified player quota. So I think as much as PWR is brilliant for the other regions, your Irish, your Scottish, your Welsh, that we need to make something else ourselves. And I think there's enough talented individuals that there could be a really, really competitive league. But we need more games. We need to work out the season. It needs to be on a par with the quality of the PWR, which is going to take some time, I think.
Yeah, the Six Nations show here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Bank of Ireland as well, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing. I want to ask you, Tanya, before we finished up, Lynn Cantwell, who again I just spotted over there as part of that winning team, you know very well as well. You think she's going to be a big help to Irish rugby now coming back from South Africa?
Yeah, I do. I mean, she did a good job down in South Africa. She's been out around the provinces, so she's met every province. She's been out around all the clubs, the AIR clubs. I just think she's just the right person. She's not there for... She's not domestic or the high performance. She's there overseeing both umbrellas, which is really, really nice. So they now... It's under one person. She can work out what's working and what's not working. She also knows the importance of the club game and underage, which is really, really nice. And she's just got experience around the world. I mean, look at South Africa and what she did with them. So she's travelled around and she's learned her stuff. And Lynn's just, she's got, you know, she's rugby smart.
Yeah.
And she's never, ever been about herself. Even when she was a player, it wasn't the Lynn Campbell show. It was the Irish women's rugby team. And I think that's really important with the job she's got with the RFU. It's Irish rugby. And it's not just one or the other. So I think she's going to have an important role to play. And I'd like to see what happens in the next 12 to 24 months.
I'd imagine she commands respect when she goes in as well because of her pedigree, not just what she's done recently, but as a player as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like she walks into your club, everyone's like, oh, who's that? Oh, that's Lynn Cantwell. She's a legend. Like, she's got so many caps. Like, everyone knows who Lynn is.
Yeah.
But also the men in rugby know who Lynn Cantwell is. And she's well-spoken. She knows her stuff. You know, she's not like me. I'd say it straight to the point and direct, and that, you know, and I'm not well-liked
for
that.
Are you saying being too direct is holding you back?
Well, I am a little bit direct, and I'm fine with that. But that's why I'm not in Lynn's job.
I was scrolling through Instagram last night, so I was talking to Matt Williams yesterday, and Matt had brought up the point. He said, hey, maybe we get to a point where we draft all of our players coming out of academies, and I'm going, all right, some people are going to blow back to this, but Matt, you know, by all means, give me your thesis. And who's there? There's Tanya at the top of the comments going, this is totally wrong.
Well, you know, someone has to say it. Everyone thinks it, but no one's going to say it. And I know I maybe should have an alias name of some sort.
Burner account.
Yeah,
I like
burner
the idea.
Account and then put my comments in. But no, I do, yeah. Lynn's not like that. She takes time to listen and she'll step back and...
Just before we finish, can I tease that out ever so slightly? So if your kids were in a situation where they were coming out of Sub Academy, you would not like the idea of, say, the RFU saying, we now have a pool of these players that are available. You go to Connacht, you go to Ulster, you go to Munster. You would think they should have the right to choose.
I think my son, he's 17, should have the right to choose. I think anyone should have the right to choose of which province they want to play for. Look, there are opportunities for those kids to go to other provinces, I see it. I mean... Obviously, Simon, my partner's academy manager, so I see him sending off players and giving them opportunities elsewhere. But essentially, if the players are good enough to want to play for their province, they should be allowed to stay and play for their province.
There you go. That's the response. That's the Instagram comment expanded upon. Philip, it's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoy the game of the weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And Tanya, hopefully it's a good one on Sunday as well.
Yep, thanks.
Thanks a lot.